I'll take it in, but don't look down.
'Cause I'm on top of the world, eh? I'm on top of the world, eh?
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to JJ's Football Fix, the A-League Hour. My name is Jordan Gifkins, and alongside me is the underrated Jake White. How are you?
What am I underrated for, Jordan?
Everything. Absolutely everybody, everybody, and everybody.
Absolutely everybody in the whole wide world.
Yes, I don't know the rest of the words. this is episode number 19 of the A-League Hour. As we continue to strive for perfection in this world of podcasting, I don't know what that means, but we'll go with it. As per usual, a little bit to talk about today, including the last week in the A-League and the upcoming week in the A-League. Is there Champions League to talk about? I think there is as well.
Yeah, because there's a split round coming up.
So a bit
incredible scenes. We don't have to do an A-League podcast next week.
We've got a little bit to talk about in regards to the A-League bidding, which we will touch on.
Let's start up our own A-League bid.
Yeah, we'll be called JJ's Football
Club.
Imagine. So it's a little bit to talk about as per usual. Realistically, we try to get through that as much as we can, as we normally do.
On the podcast.
So let's kick off. Last week we'll discuss some results that happened on the weekend, Jake. Kicking things off Friday night, Sydney FC hosted Melbourne Victory. Jake, big game, 1-2. Split by just a single goal, probably evident of where the teams are at. Bobo was the goal scorer in this one. So a pretty tight game, to be honest, Jake. I thought it was not a bad game, controversially split in parts. I'm sure you'd like to talk about that. But Sydney created more shots, had more possession, etc. The statistical areas all favoured Sydney, but they could have been down to 10 men, Jake, early on.
Yep.
Would you like to expand?
That's a bit kinky. No, I wasn't happy at all. It's a blatant red card every day of the week. In my opinion, anyway, I know Hernan did say in the group chat after it, saying that they've changed the rule and stuff like that, but at the same time, it's not even like, I think people are forgetting how fast Rojas is. Like, people are saying, oh, the ball was going to skid onto Vukovic. It wasn't. Rojas was going to get there. 110% Rojas was going to get there. And it's one of those ones where, I'm not going to sit here and bullshit. Sydney were the better team and Sydney deserved the win. But if that red card is given, then, in my opinion, it changes the whole complex of the game. Sydney are playing 80 minutes with 10 men. Which I think would have changed the result. I think Victory would have definitely won if that was given a red card, which it should have been a red card every day of the week. I don't care what rules have apparently changed and stuff like that. Every day of the week, that is a red card. Because yeah. Zulo has denied Rojas the chance to be one-on-one with the keeper, and 9 times out of 10 when Rojas is one-on-one with the keeper in those sort of in that sort of position in a big game, he scores it. So he's single-handedly denied Victory being 1-0 up in a game. So in my opinion, that is a foul. It was free kick, but it's a red card as well. And people getting on Muscat's back after the game for his comments, but show me where Muscat is wrong, realistically. In 2 of the 3 games that Victory have played against Sydney this season, the game realistically has been decided by referee decisions. He's not sitting there saying Sydney haven't deserved wins in all the games and stuff like that, because he did say afterwards Sydney were the better teams in every single game that were the better team in every single game that Victory have played against this season, and I 100% agree with that. But you look at the first game that Victory and Sydney played against each other, and you see, the handball, David Carney literally handling the ball, inside the box, which led to their goal. The second game, nothing controversial realistically about the game, in my opinion. There was a few little iffy decisions here and there, but that was realistically against both teams. And then this one, like, it's a red card every day of the week. Sydney were the better team. They deserve the 3 points, and Sydney is showing their class. But it's just, it's a weird one where I think when those decisions go against you that early in the game, I think it sort of gets into a few players' heads mentally and stuff. And then Ingham misses two golden chances after that too. And if it's a red card, realistically, if the tackle doesn't happen, Rojas makes it 1-0. Ingham finishes 2 1-on-1s. It's 3-0 to victory, and it's game over.
Mm.
So it's one of the, and it was similar in the first game of the season too, where victory were 1-0 up at half time, but they literally could have been. And I'm not just sitting here saying this as a biased victory supporter. They could have literally been up 3 or 4-0 at half time in the first game of the season against Sydney as well, where Austin scored right on half time, but Rojas missed a good chance, and Bessar Berisha missed a penalty as well. So that's 3-0 to victory again in the first half against Sydney. So victory have exploited a lot of weaknesses against Sydney, and I think that could come into play later in the season if they come up against each other in a grand final. Like I said on Facebook and Twitter, although victory have lost 3 games against Sydney, if victory were to play tomorrow against Sydney in the grand final, I'd be confident victory can win. Hmm. But again, I'm not taking anything away from Sydney. They deserve to be top. They deserve to win the premiership. They've been the best team by far all season, and they deserve the win here in that game as well, because although there was a controversial decision to start the game, basically, for 65 to 70 minutes, they were by far the better team. So they deserve 3 points.
So I want to touch on the attendance. Obviously a very controversial point to make most of our podcasts. We do bring it up, but 13,310 people rocked up to Sydney on Friday night to play a 1v2 match. I don't know. I know the weather was shit.
Do you really want my opinion on that?
Look, I mean, we're an opinionated podcast, Jake, so realistically, yes, but I know the weather was bad. It's very hard for people to get out to support their team in, you know, shitty cold weather, raining. Like, I understand it's hard, but 1v2, flying top of the league home game against the biggest club in Australia, and it is a very important fixture in the season, and it always is every season. It's one of the biggest, most looked forward to fixtures. 13,000 people rocked up.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a very bemusing fact.
No, it's shit ass. It's fucking tin pot as fuck. It is horrible, and I wanted, and I don't want people to think Sydney are the biggest team in the comp or anything like that. I'm a diehard Victory fan, and I pride my club on being the biggest club in the country. But I wanted 40,000, like, it wasn't going to happen, but I wanted 40,000 to turn up on Friday night. I wanted it to be an absolute blockbuster. And Victory fans are to play a part in that as well, and I'm to play a part in that as well. There was only 250 Victory fans that were there as well, which in my opinion is pathetic too, considering we're taking 500 to Brisbane in a few weeks as well, and we usually consistently take about 1,500 to Adelaide every single time we play in Adelaide, which that's fantastic, but in a top-of-table clash against Sydney, I would have liked to see more Victory fans there too. So we're to play a part in that as well. But I don't care what the weather is. I don't care what other sport's on in the city or in Sydney as a whole or in New South Wales. 13,000 to a top-of-table clash in any competition is fucking pathetic.
Yep.
And it's not good enough in the slightest. I was pissed off Australia Day. One, Australia Day was 40 degrees and top of the table clash, and I was pissed off when there was 35,000 against Sydney here. I wasn't happy in the slightest that there was only 35,000 at Etihad Stadium on Australia Day when it was top of the table and 40 degrees. And I not to speak for anyone else, but I'd rather go watch a game of football in 18 degrees and raining than to go stand in 40 degree heat.
Yep.
I'm not going to sit there and compare both crowds and stuff like that, but Victory got 22,000 more to a top of the table clash in 20 more degrees, and it was still raining on Australia Day as well, and I was pissed off. Like, and imagine what I'm feeling about this crowd right now when it's 20,000 less. It's honestly, it is shithouse, and it's gone through the whole league this week as well. I saw something this morning that over five games, the attendance was like 44,000. That's a Melbourne derby crowd, for fuck's sake. That's a Sydney derby crowd.
Yeah.
Like, and it just, I don't want to sit here and talk about crowds every single week, but we're at the business point of the season. We're at a point of the season where, sure, the top two is a little bit stale and boring right now, but it's not that stale and boring when you actually look into it, like, in depth. Like, Victory lose this week to Perth, and City and Brisbane win their games too. Victory is only 6 points clear. And then Victory have to go to Brisbane the week after and play against Brisbane, when Victory most likely won't have Troisi, Berisha and Rojas. So Brisbane beat Victory then that week too, plus City and Perth possibly win that week too. City and Brisbane are 3 points behind Victory, and Perth are 4 points behind Victory. So it's not completely done now. Like, looking at the table right now, it looks kind of stale. But then you've got a nice battle. Like, I think it's an average battle to watch in its own sense, but you've got a battle right now for sixth. You've got four teams separated by 5 points battling for sixth. And you've got three teams separated by 1 point battling for a home final as well. So it's not that bad. Like, why aren't people turning up to games? There was roughly 18,000 people at ANZ Stadium watching the West Tigers in South Sydney at the NRL on Friday night, and there was 10,000 in Belmore watching the Storm versus Bulldogs. So sure, that takes 28,000 sports fans away, which again, that pisses me off even more, because I had a lot of people on my Twitter that are Sydney FC supporters going to those games over Sydney FC versus Melbourne Victory. And I understand people prioritising sport, but for fuck's sake. Like, I saw on Twitter some bloke didn't go to the Sydney FC game because Sydney FC aren't undefeated anymore. Wait.
You've got a question in that respect. You have to question the scheduling. Like, why can't... The sports can coexist together and be well supported. If New South Wales Sporting Body gets together and they say they want to have them at different times, it's only going to bring more money for the state and those different things, that they have people going to all the games as opposed to having to choose one of the three.
I don't know why Victory versus Sydney wasn't played on the Saturday. Every Victory versus Sydney that I've known since 2011 has been played on a Saturday, but that's in Sydney. And in Sydney on Saturday, there was no rugby league. Like, there was a 4 o'clock game at Wynn Stadium in Wollongong in the rugby league, or Wynn Jubilee, so that's like next near the Shire or something like that. That was at 4 o'clock. So if just say Victory and Sydney to play at 7:30 anyway, all those people that went to that game, mind you, there was only 6,000 people at that game anyway, but all the Sydney FC fans or something that would have gone to that rugby game anyway would have been able to make it back into the city to go to the Sydney FC game anyway. What are FFA... It's like FFA are trying to have a battle with other codes, and I rate football as the world's biggest sport and soon to be Australia's biggest sport. But right now, realistically... And it's sort of a shot at Sydney, but sport fans in Sydney have a very, very, very huge tin pot mentality. And that proves with some tweets that I saw on Friday night that some fans weren't going to the Sydney FC game and they went to a Rabbitohs versus West Tigers game over the Sydney FC game because Sydney FC aren't undefeated anymore. What do you literally like? I know that it would have been great for Sydney FC to see, but do you expect your team to go undefeated? And just because your team's not undefeated anymore, do you stop turning up to games? And that's that. It's against the FFA too. If they play that game on the Saturday night at 7:45, I honestly think there'd be about 20,000-25,000 people that turn up, because there was no other sport in the city that night other than a JLT game between GWS and Sydney,
which attracted 4,000 people.
Exactly. Like, it's not that that's not going to compete against the A-League top of the table clash. And, like, it literally makes no sense. Like, all the rugby games that were on Saturday night were in Queensland. So, like, it literally doesn't make sense. Like, I know that the rugby scheduling comes out after the FFA schedule it, but originally the Sydney FC versus Victory game was scheduled to be on a Sunday. And the whole reason why they moved that game from the Sunday to the Friday is because there was meant to be a blockbuster NRL clash between Manly and Parramatta. And the Manly and Parramatta game only got 7,000 people to it. And they moved it from a Sunday to the Friday to go up against two NRL games against four teams that could potentially be in the top 8 this season in the NRL. It literally doesn't make sense. And people, FFA are fucking stupid. Like, I could literally go into a Bozza Roods rant right now and just fucking sit here and slate the fuck out of the FFA, because there is literally not one brain in that whole fucking organisation. But it just does my head in so much, because you want to see sold-out stadiums. That's what I want to see in the A-League. Like, I know the A-League's not the Premier League, and it's not Germany or Spain and stuff like that, and they're not going to sell out every single fucking game. But even if you're Victory and you have a 30,000-seat stadium and Victory have 23,000, 24,000 turn up literally every single week, that looks terrific on TV. It looks terrific in the stadium, because you can't just go to the stadium and pick a seat. Like, and it looked bad on Friday night at the Sydney FC game, because the Allianz Stadium set out where they have Allianz right across, like, the outer wing and stuff like that. Like, they have the sky blue seats and they have a big white Allianz written out onto seats like most stadiums do. And you could literally see what the white seats said, like, quite clearly. You could see the Allianz across the white seats, because there was no one fucking sitting in them seats.
Not only that, Jake, the games on Friday night are telecasted to a live, free-to-air audience on SBS. Now, we have been guilty, and the SBS have been guilty, and the FFA have been guilty of scheduling average Friday night games here and there. Like, Adelaide obviously not pulling crowds at the moment. A lot of Adelaide home games have been broadcast on a Friday night.
Yeah, and that's, I guess, because they won the title last season, which is fair enough. But at the same time, that'll be good coming to next season, where, and I don't want to play favouritism to it, but most Saturday night games are usually Western Sydney Victory or Sydney home games. So that'll be more entertaining for people to watch, because realistically, those three teams are the biggest teams in the country. So those are the three teams that people will most likely want to watch every single week.
Yeah.
Let's move on, because I could literally go on all day about how fucking stupid this is.
We'll move on to the next game, just because why not, Jake? The next game, moving on to Saturday here. Wellington Phoenix 3, Perth Glory 3. Goals galore in this one. Krishna opened the scoring, but I didn't think I opened the scoring in the 10th minute. Followed by Krishna in the 25th minute to give Wellington an early lead in this one. Keogh brought it back to 2-1 just after that in the 34th minute. Just after half time, Barbarousis made it 3-1 to Wellington. Looked like they were going to win this one, but Taggart and Castro, brilliant goal, brought it back to a 3-3 result. And a draw here in a very entertaining game of football. Wellington had more of the ball. Perth had more shots on goal. Probably a fair enough result, really. Perth don't travel too well. Wellington, genuinely a pretty good home team, but Perth have been much better this season, playing good football at the moment. So a draw was probably fair enough. And a very high-scoring draw at that was probably not too surprising to a lot of people that follow this game and these two teams this season. Good to see Taggart continue to score, Jake. Finkler returned to the to New Zealand after being in Brazil for the birth of his daughter or son. I'm not too sure. I think, if I'm not mistaken. And he was back on the score sheet just 10 minutes back into his return. So that was good to see from him. And congratulations to Finkler for that. If you're listening, good listening. Good on you, mate. So imagine, just give a reply from Finkler. What a guy. But yeah, Jake, probably a fair enough result here, and I'd say probably a good point for Perth, who tend to travel hard, and they did well to come back twice in this game.
Yeah, well, this is my game of the round. It was a very good game to watch, in my opinion. Literally, well, not exactly had everything, but like it was just one of those ones where like I never went into this game thinking it was going to be the game of the round. Like the Perth traveling all the way to Wellington and stuff. Like it's just like, well, one Wellington to Auckland and stuff. Like it was just like it just seems tame and stuff. But it's really weird. Like I know people talk this up. Like Wellington versus Perth these days is like a sort of take the piss derby sort of thing because they both don't have teams in their regions and stuff, so they've sort of like turned it into like the long distance derby. But it's really weird, but there actually is feeling in this game. Like it's not a derby, obviously it's not a derby, but it literally feels like both sets of players do not like each other. Like there was tackles flying in that you'd see in any derby in the world. Like, it was ridiculous. And you don't expect that, obviously. Perth coming home against Wellington, you're just like, yeah, right. An okay game of football to watch. But then you just see, like, Diego Castro lobbing in 20-metre long slide tackles. Like, it was ridiculous. And then, like, some of the goals that were scored, like, Barbarossa scored a nice goal. Diego Castro just did Diego Castro things. And it was a very, very good game to watch and very enjoyable. Like I said, my game of the round by far, because there wasn't many great games this week. And I guess that's credit to both teams. I think the game did deserve a draw. Wellington came out of the blocks really, really fast. And honestly, they could have gone up 3-4-0. But I think Perth did really well to weather that storm and bring it back. And I think just the class to show and it took a little while for players like Williams to get into the game and stuff. But once they did, they started to look really solid. And they could have won it late, but yeah, I think the game did deserve a draw. And credit to both teams for putting on a decent show.
Perth, big team this season. They're probably going to do damage in finals, I reckon, if they get a home final, especially Jake. I guess we'll see. Move on. Saturday night, Western Sydney hosted Adelaide United in front of the lowest home crowd in a Western Sydney home game this season. Didn't want to touch on the crowds, but 8,965 people rocked up to Spotless Stadium. Fair enough, I guess, to be honest. Adelaide are dog shit. Western Sydney. Unlucky, we'll say, Jake, because they dominated this game. 22 shots to 7, 56% possession. Hit the woodwork. Robbed of a goal as well. The goal, Margish, very at fault for dropping the cross, fumbling the ball. Somehow the ref pulled out a free kick out of his ass. There was no free kick involved there. Western Sydney drop points could be go a long way to them missing finals if that's the case, because Wellington and Newcastle are still hot in the trails of them just outside the six. So, look, Adelaide, we called it. A couple of weeks ago, maybe, that Adelaide could turn the corner, and they haven't. So they just continue to not do too well. But Western Sydney will be ruining their missed chances, and if it wasn't for a blunder, they would have won this one, Jake.
Yeah. it's one of those ones again where I don't know what was going on, but yeah, Western Sydney should have won. And I don't want to sit here and talk about refs again. I don't want to go on another rant. I think I've gone on my rant for this podcast, but fucking hell. But yeah, I want to steer clear from this game because I know that I'll just get in depth and I'll go on another fucking rant. So it's harsh on Western Sydney. Western Sydney should have won the game. And if Western Sydney win this, I reckon they'd probably go far enough to cement their spot in the finals. But now, I guess, for the viewing of a neutral, it's going to be interesting to see that battle for the top six still go on. Because I have a feeling that Wellington may sneak it. I've got Wellington finishing sixth at the end of the season, so could have another distance derby at the finals, John.
What a derby.
But realistically, we could have a Sydney derby in the finals. We could have a Sydney and Melbourne derby.
And a distance derby.
Well, if you actually look into it, like, obviously we want to talk about this game, but I'm just thinking of it right now. If City finished third, and so City finished third, and Western City finished fifth, which probably won't happen realistically, but if it does, then and they both win their finals, then we've got a City derby and a Melbourne derby in the semi-finals leading up to the grand final.
How many points behind are Western Sydney?
Seven. Yeah, it'd be an effort and a half, but, you know,
with just five games left in the season, it looks unlikely. We'll see. You never know. Perth could just fucking lose every game, even though they've lost six in the season. We'll move on to the next one. Central Coast Mariners hosted Melbourne City. Just a game that Central Coast Mariners pretty much shot themselves in the foot, realistically, Jake. The game kicked off in fine fashion. Fornaroli scoring a nice little free kick. Izzo at fault, I think. It's fair enough.
Yep.
Montgomery
had points with Izzo, but yeah, Izzo's definitely at fault there.
Montgomery in this 16th minute then put one into his own net. Unfortunate circumstances. They were already on the back foot there. Fabio Ferreira then scored in the 46th minute to give him a bit of hope. Scoring a free kick, which was nice, but it then turned even better for Central Coast. Rion Tongic in the 47th minute decided to put one to his own net. So good on him. What a
he
guy.
Was good in all fairness. He was decent in this game.
But then it just went downhill for Central Coast. Paul Izzo shown red. Calamitous, really, from him. I'm not sure what's going on, to be honest. But he's had a great season, Izzo. He's in my Socceroo squad at the moment. But, I mean, he's had a blunder here. He had a blunder for the first goal. He's had a blunder for the red card. Just not his day. He's still young. He'll learn from this game, but just wasn't his day. Fornaroli converting the penalty. But Jake, ended 3-2, by the way, with probably a more dominant performance from City than Central Coast, but Central Coast were resilient. Jake, I ranted slightly to you here. Ivan Nasevsky, Jake. I told you, for a team that is so youth-orientated as Central Coast, why is their number two keeper like a 48-year-old Ivan Nasevsky? It doesn't make any sense to have...
It doesn't at all.
I mean, we... I don't know. I'm not sure how where you were Central Coast like last season or two seasons ago. Heward Bell, he played like four games for Central Coast. And he played well. He played really well in his games. Why is he not the number two at Central Coast? Why have they got Ivan Nasevsky playing backup to Paul Izzo?
That literally makes no sense, that's all.
Like, how is he still a professional footballer?
He shouldn't even be fucking NPL 2. Like, he wouldn't even get a gig for Point Cook Jets right now.
No, he wouldn't at all. He is literally, he's bad. He's 36 years old. He offers nothing to a squad that is so big on giving youth a chance. Now, this Central Coast, they lost this game. Look, they're probably not going to make finals. Let's be honest. They've gone off a little bit. They're 5 points short of sixth place right now. Still five games to go, but it's a big, big effort for them to make finals from here. What harm is it in giving, you know, a young up-and-coming keeper an opportunity towards the end of the season now that Izzo's missing, I think, just the one game, potentially two, I'm not exactly sure. What harm is it going to be giving, you know, a Heward Bell or a youth league keeper from Central Coast, you know, a chance to you know, make a reputation, give an opportunity, you know, accelerate his development by giving him a game or two in the A-League. Like, Ivan Nasevsky, he wasn't a bad keeper back in, like, you know, 10, 15 years ago, whenever he was around in Sydney or whatever. He wasn't a bad keeper. He wasn't a good keeper, but he was good, you know, a backup keeper. Someone, he can come off the bench and do a job if the first keeper's out. But he's 36 years old. Central Coast have half their squad as, you know, under 21, 22 years old, their keeper included, and they've decided to give a 36-year-old backup keeper. who's probably demanding higher wages than half their squad.
And literally, like, I wish I could give you, like, a reply to it that, like, will actually offer something, but it literally makes no sense, like, and it honestly doesn't, like, you put the nail on the head, like, about the fact that they're so youth-orientated, like, why wouldn't you, like, that bloke that you said before, why don't you just, like, lob a 19 to 20-year-old on the bench? Like, even that bloke that's playing, like, into, on top of you right now at Bentley Greens or something like that. Like, someone like that. Like, it literally, it would offer more than Ivan fucking Niszewski.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, there's a reason why, like, he couldn't crack into Sydney FC teams that had some of the worst keepers I've ever seen in A-League history. Like, it's fucking ridiculous. It literally doesn't make any sense in the slightest. And that pisses me off.
I can understand the one aspect of it is experience as a factor. He has experience, and they could, for a young team, they do need the experience heads in and around the squad. But Niszewski hasn't achieved anything. He's 36 years old. He's hardly played number one keeper anywhere in his career. He hasn't really won any championships. He hasn't played national team. Like, I don't understand.
It doesn't make any sense at all.
If he had been an A-League winning keeper or an overseas keeper, you know, 5-10 years ago, he's finishing his career in the A-League, he's played for Australia, he has that experience of playing at the highest level in the world and at national team level, fair enough. You have him around Paul Izzo, you teach him a few things. You have him around the younger kids, you teach him a few things. But he doesn't.
He has been in the A-League since season one. Ivan Niszewski. And he has played 50 games.
Yeah.
Like, I think that tells you something.
He's literally played not even two whole seasons of A-League football in 10 years.
12.
12.
Yeah. That literally proves our point. He was at Sydney FC for 8 seasons and played 45 games. He was at Newcastle for 2 seasons, played 3 games. He was at New Zealand Knights for a season, didn't play a game. He's been at Central Coast this season, and he's played 2 games.
What does he offer? What does he offer over a 19, 20-year-old keeper? Nothing. And that right there, I know Central Coast are big on development of Australian football. Him being in that squad is stunting Australian youth progress.
I have no doubt in the world that they've probably turned down a young up-and-coming goalkeeper for Ivan Niszewski to sit on their fucking bench.
Yep.
I have no doubt in the absolute world, because their academy is fucking class. The stuff that they are building in Central Coast is absolute quality. So I have no doubt in the world there was a young quality keeper coming through the ranks early this season, late last season, that they could potentially have sitting on the bench and he'd be decent, probably a Paul Izzo from about 2 or 3 years ago, or a Lawrence Thomas from about 3 or 4 years ago. And they've turned him down to have this fucking mong sitting on the bench.
Well, what are they going to do? Let's say Paul Izzo. Let's put a situation. Paul Izzo gets an offer from Europe at the end of the season. He goes. And fair enough, he does deserve a chance in Europe at some stage in his career, whether it's after this season, next season. Who knows? He's good enough. Anyway, let's say he gets an offer for Europe, and he goes. So the real only keeper left at the end of this season is Ivan Niszewski, who, look, they're probably not going to play next season, let's be honest. But if they had given a 19, 20-year-old a chance in these couple of games, in the cup games earlier in the season, and Niszewski did play in the cup for Central Coast against Green Gully, if you can remember, if they'd given a young 19, 20-year-old keeper a chance in those games, give him a little bit of confidence, experience, and if he'd performed well, they could have played him, you know, in the, if Izzo left. They have that keeper there that is young, is promising, and they can play him. And they continue their reputation and philosophy of building young Australian footballers up through the A-League, giving them opportunities and literally building Australia's national team for the last 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. No, I 100% agree.
Yet they've opted for Niszewski. I mean, I'm a keeper myself. I hate, because I know there's a lot of young, not like myself included, but I've you know, played and trained with a lot of young, really good young keepers.
Well, you've got one right now. You've told me that the bloke that's playing for Bentley Greens right now could potentially be reasonable enough to be A-League quality in the future.
Oh, he can. He's a great
exactly. keeper. That's literally a point where you could have, like, maybe not right now, maybe, but you could have him on the bench for Central Coast right now. Like,
yeah, and he'd be playing one or two games now for in the A-League, getting...
It would offer it more would, than Ivan Niseski.
It would boost Ivan his career.
What has Niseski done in the two games he's played for Central Coast? I looked at his stats. He's made one save in the two games. He got fucking lobbed from halfway or some shit against Green Gully.
Yep.
Like, I think that does enough to prove our fucking point right now.
Yeah, just pisses me off. Everything pisses me off about him.
This is turning into a fucking furious podcast show.
Yeah, we hate everything about this.
I don't think it's done yet when we go into a little bit of expansion talk. So.
Newcastle in the final game of the round. They hosted Brisbane Roar. And got up to a great start. Andrew Nabu scoring the first goal of the game from the penalty spot, winning Jack a little bit of money. Brisbane Roar... then got a bit fortunate here. Jason Hoffman sent off in the 31st minute. Funnily enough, fouled a player at the edge of the box. Got yellow carded. Proceeded from that foul to boot the ball about three quarters of the way up the pitch to get a second yellow card.
That's the way Jason Hoffman sent off.
and just from that point onwards, I was on the back foot. McLaren capitalised on a foul in the box in the 62nd minute. Scored from the penalty spot. 74th minute, he scored a tap-in. And D'Agostino, just a minute after coming off the bench, scored his first goal, I think, in the A-League. So, good young, promising player. Good to see him get off the mark in just his... what game? I think he might have played like two or three games, I think, for the senior Roar team. He's played in the Asian Champions League. And now he's scored in the A-League against Newcastle. So, good on him. Good young player and only 19 years old, so hopefully another up and coming striker in Brisbane. We fucking need them. But yeah, Brisbane Roar went there, did the job. They looked very good, very class. Tommy Orr was, in my opinion, fantastic. The best player on the pitch for me was young Joe Coletti, Jake.
Yeah, you got big raps on too.
Played 79 minutes in this one. Just created, just played his role. He did everything right in this game. I thought it was fantastic. And very reminiscent, in my opinion, of a Danny De Silva / Sebastian Pasquale in a slightly deeper role.
Pasquale, don't make me cry again.
Look, he's a class young player. I had massive reps on him from the moment I first saw him, which was the Under-17 World Cup. I believe that was last year or 2 years ago. And since then, he has been embedded in my memory as a very up-and-coming young player, and he's showing his class here in the A-League, which is very good to see. And hopefully, he plays out the season, plays in the finals, and plays consistently next season, and just see him develop into the player that he most likely will become, which is a Socceroo at some point in his career, if you know he doesn't do ACL like four times.
No pressure, mate.
But yeah, Brisbane did the job, got the win, retained their position in the top four, or top five, so, top four, yep. And, and quietly going about it, they've been impressive this season. Newcastle will rue this game. You know, they were up, they got the red card. Hoffman probably blames himself a lot for this loss because they weren't looking too bad before the red card, Jake. So, you know, these things happen, it's football. But Brisbane will get the win, and that's that, I think.
Yeah, well, like you said, Coletti's fucking boss. I watched ACL game against Montaigne, I think, that he played in. And yeah, he was very good in that game as well. So it's good to see young players come through the ranks, and yeah, pretty pleased. It was a decent game. In the first half an hour that I watched, Newcastle could have gone up 2-0 very easily after they scored a penalty, but it, it, Newcastle are just one of those teams where if they get a red card, especially where they need to play with 10 men for an hour, I think a team like Brisbane was always going to run up over them. I feel like if it was 11-11 for 90 minutes, it probably would have been a draw or Newcastle would have won. But I just don't feel Newcastle have the legs in them to cover that much ground that one player would then leave. So, yeah, I think it's one of those ones where it's just unfortunate for Newcastle that that did happen. And obviously their manager getting sent to the stands, so that didn't help them as well too. So, yeah, I'm not going to read too much into it from Newcastle's perspective because they've shown their class this season. But, yeah, like I said, I just don't think their players have the legs in them to cover that much ground with 10 men.
Still a shout, Newcastle, for the finals as well, though.
They are, definitely. Well, if they win this game, they're in the top six. So, it's one of those ones where it's frustrating for their perspective because there was a huge chance for them. They're 1-0 up against Brisbane and then they get a red card and they're just all tumbling down, realistically. Like, if they go on to make it 2-0 and get a solid 2-0 win against Brisbane at home, they're in the top six and they're flying at the moment, but now they're sitting eighth and looking like they, again, might miss finals. So, it's just frustrating for their perspective because I'd like to see Newcastle or Central Coast in the finals this season. It just doesn't look like it could happen. Like, it could, I think it will happen next year. I think one of them, maybe both of them, will be in the finals next year. But I think they're just both of them are just a little bit off this season. Like, they're both very similar in a way that they play some really entertaining football to watch, but they're just like,
they've had patches.
They're just below that. They're just below the quality of finals at the moment because I feel like they're probably better off missing the finals as well, because I feel like if Newcastle did make the finals and they had to go to City the first week of finals, I have a feeling City will just go roll them like 4-5-0, which it could be a good experience for them to get some finals football, but I don't think a club like
if you make Newcastle, finals, if you make finals, you want to compete, and I can't see Newcastle competing, nor Central Coast.
I don't think it'll do Newcastle any good making finals and then getting all the confidence ripped out of them, just getting absolutely rolled by a team in finals. Like, I think they're probably, like, they're obviously not going to tank and stuff like that, but I reckon both Newcastle and Central Coast are probably better off just to, like, miss the finals this season, go through another pre-season with the same group, add some more players in, and have a red-hot crack again next season. Because they keep the same, if they keep similar squads and add some players into those squads, that you never know what they could do next season. So, yeah, I think they're both in very similar situations.
Rumours have circulated recently, well, not recently, but over the last X amount of time, Danny De Silva to Central Coast next season. So, that could be massive for them. Imagine Danny De Silva added to the squad under Paul O'Connor alongside all his young players. It's going to be a pretty good addition, Jake.
Well, that'd be fantastic. Like, literally, I think we said it earlier. In the season, like Danny De Silva, if you could just, like, if Central Coast could sign Danny De Silva and put him into that number 10 role alongside some of the young players they have, like, imagine, because I rate Roy O'Donovan highly. Like, I think Roy O'Donovan up front for Central Coast is perfect for them. So if they could have a front four, because I don't like Fabio Ferreira either, so if they could have a front four of Roy O'Donovan, Connor Payne on the left, Trent Bahagia on the right, then Danny De Silva at number 10. I'd probably watch more Central Coast games than any other team other than Victory, so I probably do even right now, realistically. So. they're good to watch, and so same with Newcastle. Like, even if Newcastle would have signed Danny De Silva as well, like, they'd have Andrew Hall, Devonto Claude, Andrew Naboo, those sort of players around, like, that'd be fantastic to watch too. So I think both of those things are in really, really good situations right now. Like, even next season, we could be saying the exact same thing. Like, they could be just a little bit off the boil to make finals again. Like, there's a huge chance we might be, but they're definitely, this time 12 months ago, I think Newcastle and Central Coast both had no hope in them. So, yeah, it's good to see them both start to pick up and show signs of life, realistically. And the F3 derby is starting to show signs of life too. Like, the F3 derby this season has been good to watch. And there's another F3 derby in a few weeks as well, which would be good to watch too.
We'll crack on, Jake, because we've spent a fucking long time reviewing. A good 45 minutes of this podcast have been reviewing this weekend's game. So we want to talk about a little bit about expansion. So we'll go through. We'll just go through the table. Sydney FC obviously still top of the table. They're pretty much nods on to get the minor premiers, it looks like. Victory, second place, 42 points. Melbourne City, Brisbane Roar have equal points, third and fourth. Perth Glory 1 point further back in fifth. So a very hot battle there for the third spot. Western Sydney just make up the top six in 25 points. Wellington just outside on 23 points. Newcastle, like we said, are still a chance in that top six race. They're on 22 points. Central Coast, not out of it, but unlikely at this stage on 20 points. And Adelaide United, still statistically a chance of making finals, but very unlikely here. 15 points further back. Just the 3 wins in 22 in a dismal season for the reigning champions. Best up, Brisbane leads all comers in the Golden Boot race with 17. Bruno Fornaroli with 15. Jamie McLaren in third with 13, and there is four players on 11. Bobo, Marco Rojas, Roy Krishna, and Adam Taggart all have 11 goals for the season. Nikovic and Rojas have 10 assists. Chris Harold has 7. Mitch Nichols, James Troisi, Brucey Kamau all with the 6 assists for the season. So, yeah, nice. We'll quickly just go into the player of the season, Jake, before we can quickly touch on expansion. So, who is your top three, your number one vote today?
My number one vote this week. I said earlier that my number one vote was going to go to Jamie McLaren Jordan, but I lied. I did a lie. I apologize. My number one vote this week goes to Thomas Orr. He was pretty awesome in the game against Newcastle.
I wrote Orr down on my phone and it auto corrected to Pat.
But nah, he was good. And yeah, I think you mentioning him just a few minutes ago, how good he was, yeah, made me realise that he was pretty fucking good. And he definitely deserves the one vote for the week, Jordan.
I'm actually going for his teammate. Can you guess who?
Teammate?
Yeah.
I'm going... I forgot what his fucking name is already. Jordan, just give me 2 seconds.
I'll just say it. We're going to rush through it. Joe Coletti.
Yeah.
He gains a vote. He gains his first player of the season votes.
He's going to win top player of the season next year.
Yeah, I don't think that's wrong at all. As I said, future Socceroo, hopefully, if he just keeps going at the same trajectory he is. Who knows, could be at Ajax in the off-season. You never know. he's showing signs very similar to Pasquale in a deeper role, Jake. I don't want to say it, but I just like thinking of the future of Australian football and having Pasquale and Coletti in 10 years' time, being at the peaks of their careers, just how good
they're
going to be.
We're going to win the World Cup, mate. We're going to win Qatar 2022.
Well, you've Moisey in there in like 5 years from
fucking
now.
Big
you know,
David Moisey is going to be our manager. Fuck yeah.
Tommy Rogic will still be youngish. Like, good team. McLaren will be better. You know, like, oh, it's just so good. Just our defence is shit.
Nicola Stanley, oh god.
Mark Warren at left back. Jake, 2 votes.
Fucking some shit players in the show. My 2 votes this week, Jordan, go to the Fijian monkey himself, Roy Krishna. He was class for Wellington. Probably should have scored a fair few more goals if it wasn't for Liam Reddy having a really good game himself as well. I think he's been a very underrated player for Wellington this season, and yeah, he gets my 2 votes.
Jake, my 2 votes today going to Bruno Fornaroli for his double on the weekend. Good free kick, good penalty, an all-round game, I thought. And he hasn't had a vote for a while, but he does get on the votes this week. Jake, player of the round.
My player of the round is, in my opinion right now, the best player in the A-League, Diego Castro. Again, pulling the strings for Perth to get a very gutsy 3-3 draw away from home in a big, big, big derby. He was fantastic.
big derby.
Yeah. He scored a very good goal. Got a nice assist. Yeah, it's just
shot the long very nicely, Jordan. And yeah, it's hard for me to say that because I think Rojas is fucking quality. But right now, Diego Castro, in my opinion, is the best player in the A-League.
My player of the round this week, Jake, goes to the Blant. Man, you gave two votes to, and that is the Roy, the Fijian monkey, Krishna. He is a goal or two assists this week. A return to form for him. He's been sort of in and out recently, well, for the most part of the season. He started the season on fire, but he's sort of dropped off. And it's good to see him play a big role in the Perth Glory long-distance derby. So... big derby, as you said. He was, in my opinion, the best player on the pitch, which is interesting that you gave the best player of the round to the player on the opposition team that I didn't give a vote to. It goes to show you watched the game and I didn't. watch the highlights. But player of the round so far this season, player of the season so far this season, Rojas, 25 votes. Leeds all comers. What am I saying? who goes in second? Castro moves into second with 17 votes. Paul Izzo in third on 16 votes. Troisi in fourth on 14 votes. And Ninkovic in fifth on 13. That's a very good top five. Very, very good top five.
Yeah, it's sort of evened itself out then, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, we have Michael Theo.
Second for about fucking 10 weeks,
Interesting. Jake, we'll quickly just cover the expansion talk. We just haven't got too much time left. We might just go over the hour mark this week. But South Sydney have lodged or confirmed a bid to become the newest A-League team, which is an interesting bid in itself, considering there's already two Sydney teams. I know a lot of people want an extra Melbourne or Victorian team, Geelong's in that discussion, but an extra Sydney team has been lodged. I'm just trying to find the information on it now. I did see it just before, but interesting for the fact that it is pretty much, it has been confirmed for one, that they have decided to bid. I think FFA actually confirmed it, so I guess that's that. But what I do not really like about this bid is the fact that there's like three areas involved, and that means that there's three different home stadiums. So for one, I don't like how, and we've seen it with Western Sydney this season, how they're sort of moving around different home grounds and stuff like that, and it's not really working for them. They can't build a home as such. Which isn't good. I think if a new team was to come into an expansion, they want to be at one stadium where they can build a fortress out of it instead of being moved around. Even though it's good for the expansion teams to sort of get more exposure around the area. Yeah. I don't think it's the way forward. They have been led by Les Murray and Craig Foster as the two high-profile names. They've also been... backed by a $12 million businessman, or he's put $12 million into it, a Chinese man has done that. So that's, I guess, that's what they want, FFA. They want money, fucking faggots. But they've got the backing. They've got the backing of him. they've said they want to be in the A-League, they want to be in the National Youth League and the W-League. And like I said, they're going to be based out of Wynn Stadium in Wollongong, Shark Park in Cronulla, and Jubilee Oval in Kogarah. I'm not sure where that is in South Sydney. But they've also mentioned that they are looking at building a boutique stadium to host the club. But you know, that probably wouldn't be made for 3 years or so. So I don't know. It is what it is, Jake. I'd love to hear your opinion on this.
Fuck it off. Please. Honestly, if the FFA actually decide to grow some fucking balls and bring in some teams, and they fucking name South Sydney as any of the next four teams that come into the league, I'll fucking burn down FFA headquarters, dead set. They fucking do my head in. What would it bring? Like, honestly, what would the South Sydney team bring? Because, one, if you look at the Sydney FC membership
like fucking fan base. Over 40% of their members are from that region that they're gonna that they want to bring a team in. So that's always that's already going to take off potentially more members one for Sydney. So then they'd be the third biggest team in Sydney. And two, you'd reckon South Sydney would probably get like fucking 10,000 members, which isn't horrible. Like it's not bad. But there's Wollongong, for one, is crying out for a team. So it makes, in my opinion, absolutely zero sense to bring in a South Sydney team and play them, play some games out of Wollongong. Why not just fucking bring in a Wollongong team? Canberra's crying out for a team. They've got a ready-made stadium. They've got fans. They could, I think, get 10,000 fans to every game at least. You've got Tasmania, who have said that they could make North Hobart Oval into a stadium. You've got Geelong, who in the last week or so have made out this massive plan that they could bring in a stadium similar to Hindmarsh Stadium. You've got South Melbourne, who are ready-made. It literally, in my opinion, makes zero sense in the fucking slightest to bring in South Sydney. Like, in my opinion, it would make no sense at all. Because Sydney, for one, and I don't want to go into my rant of earlier, they already fucking struggle for crowds. There was two games in Sydney this weekend, and they got 22,000 between them. That's one home ground. That's one home crowd for Melbourne Victory. So they already struggle enough as it is for home crowds. I don't care what any excuse anyone could throw at me for weather, because weather's a fucking shit-ass excuse, in my opinion. I think it's a horrible excuse. Because if you love the team, you don't care what weather you're sitting in. So what, you're going to bring a South Sydney team in when South Sydney, in NRL terms, already get horrible crowds, and the NRL proves that last season, where at the start of last season, Cronulla had a Monday night game in round four, and they got 2,000 people to their home game. And then they had 75,000 fans turn up to a grand final. And then last week they had 10,000 fans turn up to their round one game. I think that proves a mentality enough for a South Sydney team. Especially when Wollongong Wolves consistently get 8,000 to every single one of their NPL games. I think that is crying out for a team enough as it is. So put a team in Wollongong, not South Sydney. Because then that creates a divide away from another Sydney team. Like, in my opinion, a team in Ipswich in Brisbane should be considered more before a fucking team in South Sydney. The idea of a South Sydney team is good. But in my opinion, you want to have an identity in a team that you bring into the league. Yeah. So why would you bring in a team and then play them out of three stadiums? What's that going to do to the fan base? Oh, I've become a fan of this team, but you have to travel an hour and a half to 1 week and then travel 10 minutes to the next week. What? Yeah. Like, that makes no sense in the fucking slightest. Like, I became a fan of Melbourne Victory when I was living out of Geelong 12 years back. Sure, I had to travel an hour to every single game. And then I ended up moving to Tasmania, and I had to travel an hour on a flight to home games. And then I ended up living out of Ballarat and had to travel an hour and a half to every home game. And now I live out of wherever, so it's a half an hour trip to every game. Like, that's my choice. But it's not like Victory were playing 1 week out of Melbourne, and then the next week out of Albury, and then the next week out of Bendigo, and then the next week out of Horsham, and then the next week out of the border on that splits Victoria to fucking South Australia. Like, they played in Melbourne.
That's what South Sydney's going to do.
Because that's what Melbourne, like, their team name, Melbourne Victory, they train out of Melbourne. They play every single game out of Melbourne. Sure, Melbourne Victory play five games a season at Etihad Stadium, but the split between Etihad Stadium and Amy Park is like a fucking half an hour walk. Yeah, like,
it's not far.
Well,
one side of the city, the other.
Longer than half an hour, maybe like an hour and a half walk. Like, it takes like a 5 minute train trip to get from Southern Cross to Richmond Station, and they're both next to each other. Like, that's like, that's a, if someone was to bring up that argument for me, that'd be a fucking stupid argument. Like, the distance between Shark Park and Wing Stadium would be roughly a 80-minute drive. Like, that's not going to appeal to anyone. It'll appeal to the people of Wollongong because they've been crying out for an A-League team, so they'll support the team, obviously. But then just base the fucking team out of Wollongong. Like, and I know, and I'm going to keep on saying it, and it sounds biased because I'm Victorian and I hate everything about Sydney, but if they bring in a South Sydney team above some of the bids that I've seen from Geelong, South Melbourne, Wollongong, Tasmania, and Canberra, if they bring in a South Sydney team ahead of that, then that literally proves everyone's point about the FFA being Sydney biased. Because it literally, there is so much more crying out for a team than another Sydney team. When, like, both Sydney teams right now are not failures because they're both in the top three, top four biggest clubs in the league. But like I said before, they both got a combined 22,000 on the weekend. Like,
Jake, I just, in regards to the location of the stadiums that they've put forward, Wynn Stadium and Shark Park are only a half an hour drive, but the distance between Jubilee Park and Wynn Stadium is an hour and 48 minutes. It will take almost 2 hours by public transport to get from one to the other. More than 2 hours to get to one to the other, which is included in two different trains and a bus to get to the stadium.
Yeah,
so if you live in Wollongong,
exactly.
You're gonna what incentive does it give them to travel? Probably would take about 2.5 hours to get. That's just from the stadium, exactly. And there is a train station close to the stadium of Wollongong. So if you take a little bit of time to get to that stadium, it's just gonna take you like 2.5 hours. What incentive does it give you to travel that far? Why wouldn't you just say Wollongong's a team? If you live out near Jubilee Park, you're probably better off supporting, you know, a different Sydney or Western Sydney. You're probably closer to that than South Sydney. There's no incentive for people of Wollongong to go travel 2.5 hours to get to a home game at Jubilee Park. None at all.
I'm not going to, again, sit here all day and talk about it, but it, honestly, if they bring in the South Sydney team over some of the bids that I've seen, sure, the South Sydney bid is appealing in the way of money and it already has backing, but then it's just one of those ones where, like, why would you?
Yeah.
Like, why would you bring in that team? Like, when there's, like I've said again, Wollongong crying out for a team, Canberra crying out for a team, Tasmania, Geelong, South Melbourne, Ipswich, all crying out for teams. There's a backing in the way of a Chinese bloke and Les Murray and Craig Foster backing it, but there's no public backing. Like, there's not like 500 people rocking up to headquarters or anything like that, backing it, saying we need a team here. It's just got fucking people's backing in the way of like that are in suits. It's got Craig Foster and Les Murray's backing, but they're not going to rock up to every game. They're not the people that are going to go buy memberships and go on away trips supporting the team.
Yeah.
They're not the people that are going to be there in the stands every single week, no matter what the conditions, supporting the team. The public are the people that are going to be doing that. So,
we'll move on. We're going slowly over time. Let's just kick on with the preview quickly. We'll just go through it. We'll obviously probably talk about expansion next week and crowd figures next week and referees next week and everything about the A-League next week, but let's just do the preview. Let's get through it, Jake. Friday night, Sydney host Central Coast Mariners. Interesting game, I'm not going to lie. Sydney, obviously the favourite. Central Coast is slightly out of form, to be honest. But an exciting team on their day could produce an upset, but I think Sydney should win this game comfortably and continue their streak. Impressive season.
Well, there's only two games to talk about this week. It's so weird. Like, I was just looking at it. Yeah, it's a bit odd that there's a game on Friday and Saturday and not a game for another week.
What's the basis behind that?
Asian Champions League, I'm pretty sure. Which
so why is Sydney playing again, Sydney Newcastle?
I'm going to go into another rant.
Make it
what
short.
What the fuck? Like, what the fuck? Why is there a split round here where they can't take a fucking week off for an international break?
It's an interesting point, isn't it?
Oh, my fucking God, Jordan! Why? Teams do it all over the world. Who gives a fuck if teams have to go? Who cares if Adelaide have to play this week, then they have to fucking travel to North Korea next week, during the week, then come back the week after. Who cares? They do it over all over the world. They travel the same amount of distance. I know that the squads aren't big enough, but then again, that proves how stupid FA are because they don't offer the amount of squad space for teams to be able to travel like that. But it doesn't make any sense. Why can't you just have this week normal, have next week normal, then have the week after an international break so teams like Victory, Sydney, City, Brisbane, Wellington, especially Wellington, aren't completely fucked that week?
Yeah. I don't understand why they don't just reschedule the... Let's say, for example, Adelaide, Brisbane, West Sydney will play on like the Wednesday night. Why don't they reschedule all the games from that previous weekend to say play on either early Saturday or Friday night, and then reschedule the games that following weekend to say a Sunday or something like
exactly.
that?
Exactly. But like I said earlier, there is not one fucking brain involved with the whole of FFA. Because now, and I'm not saying this as Victory bias, because the most fucked team when it comes to international breaks is Wellington. Like, I would hate myself if I was a Wellington fan around international scheduling as much as I would hate myself being a Wellington fan in general. because they literally have, like, seven players missing and stuff. But Victory are going into a very big game in a few weeks against Brisbane without three of their best fucking players. And Sydney could miss a few people. I don't reckon anyone will lose. Sydney will lose anyone because they've built a squad where no players will miss through international, but they've built a fantastic squad. But Sydney will win. I can't go on any more rants because I'll end up fucking breaking my TV or something. But Sydney will win. Move on to the next game because I'm about.
There's only one other game we'll cover: Victory versus Perth. I'm gonna go for a draw. That's all we've got time for today, Jake. We certainly ranted a little bit more in this episode than most, but I think this is going to become a common occurrence until the end of the season, until something changes, to be honest, Jake, or something is announced to make something change. I think you and I and a lot of football fans around Australia are just sick of the shit that's being served to us through FFA, and something's going to change. Bozza, and thankfully Bozza and Mark Rudin came forward, pretty much said what everyone was thinking last week.
Hey, this podcast doesn't get like fucking 5,000 hits from the amount of rants I've gone on.
Well, I'll make sure it gets around. but yeah, that's all we've got time for. We'll be back Friday for the Everything EPL podcast. We'll be doing stuff on EPL on that podcast. Surprise, surprise. But until then, Jake.
Have a bad. I'm on top of the world. Hey, I'm on top of the world.